start to introduce myself and my colleagues here. My name is Rodrigo. I'm an MEP from the Liberal Party in Portugal. I'm leading this meeting because I'm one of the vice presidents of the Foreign Affairs and Portuguese Communities Committee. Beside that, I'm also one of the vice presidents of the Parliament. And at my right, but from the left, so it's correct for you, Rui Tavares, a member from LIVRE, a party from the European left ecologist. He will present himself. Before he was a MP here, he was MEP in the European Parliament also for one mandate. And at my left, but from the right, so it's correct for you, Paulo Núncio from the Christian Democrat Party, let's present this way, is one of the parties that is in the coalition of the Portuguese government. Paulo, in a previous life, was Secretary of State of for Tax Affairs. So different approach and experience from our side. So welcome. It's a pleasure to receive you here. And I will just apologize. At some moment, I will be called to make some statements to the press because of the daily polemic of the day. So, and then I will come back. But the word is for you now.
Thank you very much for taking time off in your busy schedule to meet with us. This is the EFTA EEA delegation at the Norwegian Parliament, which is a multi-political delegation with six permanent members and then substitutes. So I'm the head of the delegation. I also, as you, sit in the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, as we have merged the two in Norway. We're very happy that we are here, and also that we can discuss some of the policies and situations in Europe, but also the tensions that we have in a more global perspective. I think I'll briefly introduce, if you can introduce yourselves, and then we go.
Okay. So I'm Magnus. So my name is... okay.
You can take the other one.
Yeah, I can take the other one. So, hi everyone, my name is Mani Husseini and I'm a member of parliament for the Labour Party, the ruling party.
Jan Tore Sanner from the Conservative Party, we're a centre-right party like the Social Democrats in Portugal.
And I'm Osman Aukrust from the Norwegian Labour Party, which is in Norway a social democratic party, but I mean, it's a traditional socialist party here in your country, and also together with Trine Lise, a member of the Standing Committee for Foreign Affairs and Defence.
And my name is Hanne Brusletto. I'm the Norwegian ambassador in Portugal, and these names was totally confusing for me in the beginning.
Per Olaf Lundteigen, member of the Centre Party, one of the Green parties in Norway.
My name is Sivert Bjørnstad. I'm a member of the Progress Party, which is a conservative libertarian party in Norway. I'm a member of the Standing Committee on Business, Industry and Trade back in the Parliament.
Terje Halleland, I'm also a member of the Progress Party and a member of the Standing Committee of Energy and Environment.
Good
Good. And also then, as you probably know, we are here on occasion of the EEA grant to also visit some of the project that has been ongoing for quite a long time. When it comes to the meeting with you, I mean, Norway and Portugal are like-minded countries. We share some of the same interests when it comes to how the EU now is on their way to deal with the security and safety situation on a greater scale than before. As a non-EU member, we are still, through the EEA agreement, fully integrated to the inner market. And we also, when it comes to our businesses and the way we conduct our ways, we are very much interested in how EU now develops. Also when it comes to Russia's aggression towards Ukraine, I think we also share the same interest that it is vital that that Ukraine actually succeeds in their endeavor for freedom. Also, another topic is the war in the Middle East, also the increasing increasing suffering, and now the prolonging of not be able to get a peace agreement and peace to the area. So I think there's a lot of things that we could talk about and share our views on. So I think I'll just start there. And then again, thank you for taking time to have this meeting with us.
So I have two good news to share with you. The first is that, as you already aware, we have a branding problem with the name of the parties in Portugal, but not in the three case here. So here there is no branding problems in the name of the parties. The second good news is that at least the three parties here present, being very different between them regarding the foreign affairs and especially the European project, there is a huge consensus. All the parties here believe in the European project and want to increase the European project with the members of the EU and with the partners of the EU, as it's your case. Regarding the issues that you already present, there's also consensus, especially regarding what's happening in Ukraine, regarding what is happening in Israel and Palestine. There's, I think, the only not consensus is the timing of the recognition of the state of Palestine, but there is a consensus between these three parties in the two-state solution. So it's just a question of time. I know it's not a small question, but there is. I don't know if you have special questions for us, but I will pass the word to Rui from Liv, and then to Paulo, and then back to you, so you have some questions to present to us.
Well, thank you very much, Rodrigo, and welcome to the Assembly of the Republic of Portugal. As Rodrigo said before, I'm a member of the party that is the representative here of the European Green Party. Our name is Livre, which means free in Portuguese, but we are from the Green Left, as Rodrigo said. Formally, I was in the European Parliament, and actually I was a rapporteur for the Judicial and Police Cooperation Agreement with Norway that was approved in 2011 after the terrible terrorist attacks in Utøya. And so I worked with your colleague ambassador at in Brussels at the time, and it was a very good cooperation, and it made me even more sensitive to the questions of, to the need of pan-European judicial cooperation and police cooperation, namely when it comes to investigating and prosecuting terrorist networks in the continent. Well, Portugal is also a former EFTA member. Well, when I was born, we were EFTA members at the time. And we are very grateful for the work that the EEA grants have done in Portugal. I'm a historian, so I come from a humanities bent. For instance, it was very important, the investment that was made in the recovery of the Jewish heritage in Portugal of with support from the EEA grants in Alenquer, Belmonte, and other communities in Portugal. It can be seen as a small project, but in symbolic terms, it was an important one, and it, I think it's, I don't know if it's one of the projects that you will follow up on or visit. Well, we're always open to discuss avenues for cooperation, be it intra-parliamentarian or ideas that you will take up home regarding the EEA grants. I think it's one of the elements where we could have a problem in terms of EEA-EU relations, because it's, in a way, a fee for access to the internal market, but where we have a problem, we can find a solution, because these EEA grants, they can sometimes produce good results. So happy to discuss further with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presence here. Welcome to the Portuguese Parliament. As Rodrigo has mentioned before, my name is Paulo Núncio. I'm a vice president of CDSPP, the Christian Democratic Party, center-right wing party, a pro-European party. We belong to EPP group in the European Parliament. I'm also a leader of the our parliamentary group here in the Portuguese Parliament, and I'm also a member of the Committee for Budgetary Issues here in Parliament. In terms of the topics you mentioned before, I would like to know more about your position on the relationships between Norway and the EU. We have also European Party members, European Parliament members, and it's always a topic, the relationship between the European Union and European countries that do not belong to the European Union. I would like to know what can we do to close the relationships between Norway and the European Union. I know that there is a position, a fundamental position in Norway, at least a majority position, that Norway should not join the European Union. But I think it's important to work to close the ties between the European Union and Norway. In terms of Russian aggression to Ukraine, I also would like to know more about your position on this aggression. You are near the conflict, much nearer than we are, and our position is clear. We support Ukraine. We try to support Ukraine in all the ways we can. As Norway, as you know, Portugal is an old member of NATO. Actually, the Portuguese Minister of Defense is the president of our party, Nuno Melo. and our position is very clear, and I would like to know exactly how Norway stands in this type of aggression. For us, it will be important to support Ukraine and to do everything we can to support the victory of Ukraine in this fight, in this war.
Okay, now let me just say something as a Liberal Party member, not as the Vice President of the committee. One of the issues that supposedly is in your agenda for this visit, beside the EA grants and other issues, it's the possibility of some finance to teaching Portuguese in your schools or your universities. One of our positions, political positions, is that in Portugal we should look to our language, besides all the heritage, the history, the culture, look to our language for its economic value. We believe that any person in some other country that beside your his own language, if he knows to understand and to speak Portuguese, the possibilities around the world are huge. Not only in the countries where Portuguese is the official language, as Brazil and some African countries, but if you know, if you understand and know Portuguese, you could understand very easily 17% of Spanish, for example. And the other way, it's not true. Who knows Spanish, it's not going to understand Portuguese so easily. So, knowing Portuguese, it's 100% for millions of people to contact. And if you could easily understand Spanish, it's so much million more people. And 30% of Italian also. So this is the potential of the Portuguese language. It's social value, cultural value, but economic value. So looking to the future, maybe if the Norwegian entrepreneurs, if they know Portuguese, they could look to the world beside the countries where the Portuguese is the official language. So if you could share also something about that. It's an issue that I really like and I normally push for this. So now the word is yours.
Thank you. First, when it comes to the question about whether or not Norway will seek a full EU membership, it's correct that we are divided almost down the middle in the population. I mean, we are different parties present today, which has a different stance on the question. Me personally, I would not think that joining would be such a bad idea, but still there are debates, and of course one of the things that times now demand of us, as we see that there are more and more issues covered or not covered by the EEA agreement, so that we to a greater extent than earlier at times, make bilateral agreements towards EU, whether it's on industry, on Green Deal, on security. There are also then negotiations when it comes to health and such. So there is, we have the EEA agreement, but we also have, I think now, a little over 100 different agreements hanging on the EEA agreement. So when we have this geopolitical tension in the world with more and more regionalization, I think that what happens within the EU is for us very vital also for the Norwegian population. So we had a referendum in 1994, and the vote was clear that we do not join the EU. Sometimes I see that say that we are more or less members, but we are not in the room when the decisions are being made, because we are so integrated in the inner market. So what applies to you also applies to us, which, I mean, for fair competition purposes is fair. So we recently had a report done in April that assessed the EEA agreements, and also what works, what doesn't work, what are the different issues. There's a summary in English, I know, not in Portuguese, but there is a summary in English, so you can look into it. But I do not think in the near future that it will be a new referendum, because people need to know more about how the EEA agreements actually work, and that some of the findings in that report that the Norwegian population should increase their knowledge about the agreements of such. When it comes to the Russian
the report you mentioned was issued by which entity?
It was the government that put together a group, a commission of specialists that looked into the agreement. There was one done in 2012 also, but then this is the most recent one.
I look forward to it.
We can provide you with an English translation.
The Commission report clearly shows how integrated we are into the EU. When it comes to the Russian aggression towards Ukraine, we have all parties in Parliament has come together and made the Nansen program, which is a program of a period of 5 years. I would say that, and different parties might want to correct, but I don't think so on especially this issue. I do think I said that there's in Parliament no opposition towards supporting Ukraine. In the society of such, it's not much opposition towards this. Now there are talks about how we can additionally support Ukraine. The Norwegian Parliament has also for a long, long time had a cooperation agreement with the Ukrainian Parliament, the Rada. There's not too long ago that they visited also Norway to exchange views. And there's, just to underline the support from the population towards Ukraine, there's a lot of different private initiatives to lend aid towards Ukraine. I myself have been driven humanitarian and other supplies to the frontiers in Ukraine. And I think that most people in Norway would like to see that Ukraine actually wins, and that we can uphold the European values. After all, we are Europeans. And it's totally correct. The war is very close to us. Now, after Sweden and Finland also has joined the NATO, of course, that makes our possibilities as a NATO alliance to further exchange how we work. And we have we used to say that we have a border towards Russia that is quite long, but after Finland joined, our border towards Russia seems short, but within addition to the Finnish borders, I mean, we have a very long border, and it's not too long ago that the fight got really close to us. So are there the Portuguese in the schools? Should we wait until he's back?
Yes.
And but maybe there's some other that want to add. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. My party, the Centre Party, is in government, together with the Social Democratic Party, with their Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre and the Foreign Minister Espen Barth Eide. And my party is very proud to be outside the European Union. And a very large majority in the Norwegian people is against membership in the European Union. So it may be a question in next years, but no one except the Conservative and the Liberal Party said they want discussion today. In my party, we have a problem with the European Union, with a system error in the European Union. And that's my question. We see an ever closer integration in the European Union. A lot of countries have euro, but without a finance department. At the European level. When we come to US, they agree with us. They said that when they established United Nations, the American system, they first established a finance department, and then they established the dollar. What will you say about this situation? For how long time can this exist? A common euro without the common finance department?
I think I have four other that has asked for the floor. Should we take all the questions and then divide, or do you? Should we?
Yeah, I think that's best.
Take all the questions. Yeah. I think then we save time. So, Osman.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is also related to Ukraine, and as Trina said, and also you mentioned, we are also a neighbor of Russia, and historically Norway has had quite a balanced relationship with Russia. We have been a very strong ally. We have been one of the founding members of NATO back in 1949, but still we have had. We are the only neighboring country of Russia who had never been in war with our neighbor. And we have had this folk-to-folk or people-to-people cooperation. Of course, today that's not possible anymore after what we have seen for some years, both with invasion in Georgia in 2008 and in the occupation of in Ukraine in 2014, and then the full-scale invasion 2 years ago. And we have a very strong and very bipartisan support for Ukraine. All political parties stand behind it. This year it's about 2 billion euros, which about or more than half is military.
and the rest is humanitarian and civil support. And additional to that, Norway has also received over 70,000 Ukrainian refugees, and I mean, our population is quite small. We are about half the size of your country. So in the Norwegian size, that's a very high number. But what we see in many European countries is that, I mean, the support is weakening. We saw the election in Germany this week. We see the same in the US. If you could say some words about how you see this landscape here in Portugal. My second question is related to the EU. And you asked, what can we do to tighten or closing our relationship? And that's, I mean, that's part why we are here. And to learn more about how you see things from the south in the EU. And my question is, where do you see the union now develop for the next next term? We just had an election. We will have a new president of the European Council from your country, so congratulations with that. Where do you see the development, and what do you think will be the biggest challenges in the years to come? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jan Tore Sanne from the Conservative, or in Portuguese, the Social Democratic Party. Since you asked, my party is a strong pro-Europe party. I think it's important that we stand together and solve the problems concerning climate change and security issues, and also migration issues. My question is about China. We were told that after the financial crisis, a lot of Portuguese companies was privatized, and China was investing heavily. Going back to 2010, there was a more open view to what's happened in China and Chinese investments. But today, it raised a lot of security issues. Maybe you can elaborate a little about how you see the security issues concerning the heavily Chinese investments in Portuguese. Are there any debates around those issues? Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question with the new situation in Europe after the Ukraine war and the challenges we have got for the energy. The cost of living is rising, cost of production is rising. We see also that lots of jobs are leaving Europe, and we are having some challenges related to climate and the energy transition. Is this affected to Portugal and Portuguese politics?
And then lastly, Norway and Portugal are the two only European countries that are invited to the G20. So if you could maybe say something about that, I think it's very important that we have close cooperation as two European countries, also towards the roles of the G20. Thank you.
So I don't have any answers for you. I have one or two because of sleep already highlight. But of course, first Rui and then Paulo for the answers.
Oh, thank you very much. There's plenty of questions. We're going to have an intra-parliamentary seminar for a full week to explore them all. But I think some I would really like to touch upon. Well, first, EU and EEA. As I told you in my presentation, I was rapporteur for a file that had a direct bearing with Norway and also with Iceland. And in that case, there was a dialogue with the Norwegian authorities. But I remember voting lots of files where we had EEA relevance between brackets. And I don't think that many of the members of the European Parliament were aware that what they were voting on also applies to Norway and Iceland. They voted it as EU law. If maybe the ambassador in Brussels would reach out to have a dialogue with us on something pertaining to the internal market and say, this affects Norway and we would like to speak a little bit more about it, I think that the rapporteur or the head, the head of the committee would pay attention. But that would be one voice of one non-voting member among 27 other voices that could rise. And that would always have comments and that would have a delegation in the European Parliament. So from the point of view of the EU and the European Parliament, from the point of view of the European legislator, that's a great bargain. Because it's the opposite of what made the Americans revolt in the 18th century, since you mentioned it, which is they had taxation without representation. Well, you also have taxation without representation in that case, because you do pay EE grants. The rapporteur, the legislator at the EU level, may or may not take into account that dialogue, because in the end, you will not be in the room voting. But I also think that, and going to another question, that the EU needs to reform and change in order to become more sustainable into the future. And the biggest problem, as I see it, is a question of it's the rule of law problem in the European Union, meaning that when countries accede to the European Union, they have to accept the Copenhagen criteria, but after they are in the club, there are plenty of ways to undermine that common acquis. And that I think is what now, for instance, undermines European unity regarding Ukraine, regarding Russia, regarding China. On the euro, at least that's the position of my party, we see the eurozone crisis as solved. It was solved in the last decade, mainly when Mario Draghi was a central banker. There are stuff to be done, but the euro is here to stay. And I think that's also the opinion. You are in one of the countries where it was harsher, where it was more difficult. It was many people had to emigrate. We may have different views on this, but everybody agrees that the 2010-2011 was tough on the Portuguese. And then you look at the opinion polls, and you don't see the Portuguese wanting to leave the euro. So that gives you a measure of the stability of the currency in my view. So I will leave other questions open other colleagues to answer. I would just like to touch upon two things that maybe if you could address. One would be the question of Arctic security, because there's also an implication of, changing developments in the Arctic regarding relations with Russia, energy, maritime routes, etc. The EU does not have access to the Arctic. You have, and Iceland has, but not the EU. How do you see that changing? I would like to know more about green hydrogen and Norway. I've read that you wanted to establish or that you have a Norwegian hydrogen agency or maybe a public company. I don't know if, even bilaterally after the meeting, if anyone can tell me more about this. Final point regarding Ukraine and Portugal. Portugal has a big Ukrainian community. That's one of the things that maybe from afar people don't have that perception, but the Ukrainians are maybe the third largest community in Portugal after Brazilians and people from Cape Verde. Probably.
No, second.
The second, it's now, after Brazilians, it's... So it's far away, but very close, because everybody has a Ukrainian neighbor, member of the family already, because they have been new families and marriages and sons and daughters, a Ukrainian colleague at work. So solidarity with Ukraine is also strong, and I think it will remain strong in the future in Portugal. Thank you.
Okay. Starting with Ukraine and Russia, I think we agree that we cannot allow a victory of Mr. Putin after the Russian aggression. The question is, how can we increase the support to Ukraine? And I would like to know what Norway is doing in this regard in order to help Ukrainians to beat the Russians. Another question regarding Ukraine is whether or not Norway is going to increase investment in defense. As you know, there is a goal, 2% of GDP. Portugal is committed to achieve these goals until 2029. As I told you, the Minister of Finance, Minister of Defense in Portugal is the leader of CDS, and we are very committed to achieve these goals, at least until 2029. But I would like to know exactly what is the position of Norway in this regard. You also mentioned that we have an euro, but without a financial department. Let me start by telling you that we have very strict EU budgetary rules. And until now, at least in my opinion, they are working very well. And they are delivering results in the European Union as a whole. So as you know, under the current EU budgetary rules, EU member states are required to keep their budget deficits within the 3% GDP and their public debt within 60% of GDP. And for instance, in Portugal, since our last financial crisis in 2011, we had already two budgetary surplus. And our public debt is already below 100% of GDP. So we are progressing, and our financial situation, it's much more solid than before. We have a new framework regarding EU budgetary rules, new rules, new criteria, in a sense more flexible. And I think this new framework addresses some of the concerns addressed by some of the European Union member states. In the end, and trying to answer to your question directly, I would say that I do not think that the EU will have a financial minister or financial department in the near future. So it will continue to be a cooperation between member states within some strict EU budgetary rules, which in the end can result in sanctions if the EU member states do not follow those rules, may result in sanctions imposed by the European Commission. And as I told you, I think those rules are working quite well and will continue to work as well as until now. In terms of new goals for Europe in the next years, I would say three words. Defense. It's a new paradigm. Of course, our two countries are members of NATO. But we have to see what happens with NATO if Mr. Trump wins the US election. So I think the Europeans should take care of their own defense outside NATO, in cooperation with NATO, but investing in defense. So defense will be for sure one of the main goals for Europe in the next years. Enlargement, There are at least 8-9 countries that already ask a request for joining the European Union, so enlargement will also be a hot topic in the near future. And finally, I would say economic competitiveness. Europe must continue to be a major player in terms of the world. And I think we have been losing some of the status that Europe has had in the past. And I think we should be a more competitive bloc towards the United States and also towards China and Asia. So I think this economic competitiveness should also be a hot topic in the next future, the near future.
Okay. I was here talking with Rui regarding the nationalities that are living in Portugal. Yes, the Brazilian are the first 29%. This is the official data numbers. We think there is missing here something. That's the reason I'm pushing the issue. Ukraine's are the fifth country, but looking to the numbers from December, the Ukrainians that come these 2-3 years are not all accountable here. So this is the reality because 20 years ago, maybe, there was a huge movement of Ukraine to Portugal 20 years ago, yep. Something like that. And they were very well integrated. And we believe that was one of the reasons that now when it was the war, a lot of Ukrainians they choose Portugal because they had family here, they know they were very stable in this country. That was one of the reasons why we received so many Ukrainians these last years. And besides I think it's the majority of the Portuguese people support Ukraine, with no doubt. It's huge consensus, social, political, culture. And one of the questions that Philippe told me that you stand was how the country is looking to this support that is given. If the people are with less supporting the efforts of supporting Ukraine, and that's one of the concerns that, at least for us, the Liberal Party, we stood up every time. We must be aware, because this is normal when there is a war, that with the time passing, the support will be decreasing. It happens, it's not significant. I think if you go to the streets and ask the people, Portugal should continue support Ukraine, financial, material, more than 90% of the people will say yes. If you ask the people, we should send troops there, everybody will come. But I think that's normal in all countries. But the support still, and as Rui stood up, the belief in the European project, even in people when there are polls, it's huge. The Portuguese, it's one of the European country where the people support more the presence in the European project. If you ask about NATO, the answer will be similar. There are historic reasons for that, cultural reasons for that, political reasons for that, but regarding this foreign affairs, politics, I think the Portuguese people will always support the relations with the United States, and Brazil, the Atlantic vision, with Europe, the European vision, and with Africa, especially with the countries that speak Portuguese. It's like it's the triangle of our foreign affairs. It's the Atlantic, the Lusophony, and Europe. and this is very solid, even in these difficult and complex days.
I think you had some questions. I see that time is running, so maybe we could just very quickly say something about this spring session in Parliament. We handled the defense long-term strategy plan, which has a 12-year view, but already this year we are within the 2% goal, and the government is talking about reaching towards that 12-year period towards the 3%. So that's the answer to that. When it comes to Arctic security and Ukraine, I don't know, Osman, if you want to say something more about it.
Just two words, and I guess some of you might come tonight as well. Maybe to the ambassador, but of course I completely agree that we should strengthen the support for Ukraine, and we had this package for 5 years. What we have done is that we have front-loaded part of it to this year, so about 700 million euros was front-loaded in the spring, and there is a discussion which we should do even more during this fall. And then again, this is a bipartisan support, and our Prime Minister has invited all the party leaders to continue that discussion later on in September. When it comes to the Arctic, of course, the biggest challenge for the Arctic is the climate changes. In Svalbard, the Norwegian island, very close to the North Pole, it was 20 degrees this summer. I mean, this is unique, and... yeah, I think it's, yes, not an average in one day, but still, I mean, it's very scary. But what we see is that also the Chinese are more interested in the Arctic. Traditionally, Norway and also together with Russia had a common interest in holding China out of the Arctic, but because of the... how dependent Russia today are of China, we see, I mean, a shift in also the Russian rhetorics in concerning the China's interest in the Arctic. But of course, these are some of the main challenges of the main discussions in Norwegian foreign policy and security policy.
Anyone on hydrogen? Quick.
Yeah, I can say some words on hydrogen. Of course, hydrogen isn't a new technology. We have produced hydrogen in Norway for some years, and our biggest state-owned company, Statkraft, is very keen to start projects. But as you know, hydrogen is very expensive, so you have to find a good business model in order to do that. So. What I can say that it's a huge interest from Europe, especially Germany, to export blue hydrogen. So hydrogen from natural gas without CO2 emissions. That's the biggest demand as now. But many of our other companies, like Equinor, as many of you know, also is looking into hydrogen. But as long as there are cheaper energy carriers, that they will be favored.
I think that was the questions. I just wanted to thank you for setting aside time for us. We are very eager to deepen our bilateral relations. And also towards the EU, which is by far our most important international agreement. I think that we have mutual interests of exchanging views and also keep in touch. So thank you, and we are looking forward to the days here in Portugal.